Daddy, what are you doing?
We're recording a podcast.
Who's listening?
Islander fans are listening.
Where are they?
Well, they're right here.
Welcome to the Isles Faithful Podcast with your host, Michael Schoerlein.
Hello and welcome back to the Isles Faithful Podcast. It has been a minute, you can say. I think I might have said that the last time we did this. A little bit of a gap here between episodes. As you know, I had a busy holiday like the rest of you. I was home with the kids, did a bunch of stuff with them, had a good time for Christmas. They all enjoyed everything there, having some good times with families, going back and forth. And then in the middle of all that, or after, I should say, I started a new job. So I kind of was trying to get caught up there and get acclimated, and it's been great working with some fantastic new people a lot closer to home. So just it's all settled in there now, so which is why we're here. I've said over the last couple of weeks that I've wanted to get an episode out, and I said I was going to, and then something else came up, and regardless, I'm here now. That's what's important. Today is January 26th, 2020. It's a new decade. We're into something new here, something new and exciting, 2020. I am going to be 40 this year. I can't believe it. That's just amazing. Anyway, this is episode number 42, and I am your host, as always, Michael Schoerlein. So what are we going to get ourselves into today? If you follow me on Twitter, at IslesBlogger, I have been complaining nonstop about the same type of things I guess everybody else has really been complaining about, and that's the Isles have been rather pedestrian as of late. What I mean by that is, you know, since the amazing stretch of games that they had earlier in the season, the Isles were 27-2 the last time we spoke. They're now 29-15-5. So they still have a winning record. They haven't really played all that great. So it's a difference of 9-8-3. They're over 500, which is good. You could break that down even further and say maybe they aren't 500 over the last 10 or so games. I'm not 100% sure. I did write 5 pages of notes here, but that's not one of the things, of course, I looked up, unfortunately. You know, I got all this paper right here. So what are we going to do? Over those 20 games, the Isles have obviously been pretty pedestrian, as we just spoke about. They've struggled in all areas, oddly against some lesser teams with lower standings than them, lower in the standings. And there's been some blowout losses, some late goals against, some power play goals against late. I'm looking at you, Derek Brassard, against your former team, no less, which, again, could go either way. I didn't necessarily think it was a penalty. I said on Twitter, you know, when a guy's head goes low and his feet go over his head, it's an embellishment. And, you know, we'll get into that in a little while as well. So we got some non-calls that still continue here, and we'll get into that as well. Isles are currently third in the Metro, but just 3 points from not being in a playoff spot at all. Columbus is 1 point back, Carolina 2, and Philly 3, respectively. And this is going into the last game last week before the All-Star break. The Isles are also, now that the All-Star break is over, are going into their CBA-mandated bye week. So we won't see another game here until February 1st, the day before Super Bowl, which is next weekend. So we have a bunch of days to sit and mill about and wonder what's going to happen. On the other end of the spectrum, they are 4 points back of Pittsburgh, who just can't seem to lose no matter how many injuries they have. They're 7 back of Boston and 8 back of first place Washington. The East is very tight. So if you do the quick math there, there's only, I think, 11 points between first and the last wild card spot, maybe a little more. That's parity for you. That's the new NHL. That's what they want. It is exciting. I love hockey. I love this time of year. Granted, I'm a little stressed about a couple of different things, but you know, the Isles did manage to bank all those points earlier in the year, so they're riding on that, and we'll see what happens. During the last 20 games, the Isles have scored 60 goals and allowed 62. So for the rest of this, or for the season to this point, the goal differential is plus 11. I don't know exactly where they were last year at this point. I know it's probably a little worse because the goaltending, while it has been good defensively, the Isles have struggled. They've also struggled offensively as well. So that number is a little tighter than maybe we have wanted it and we saw last year. So I tweeted during this stretch of poor play that the leading scorers since Christmas had 5 points each, and that was Barzal and Nelson. It's improved a little bit, and I'm going to go through some numbers here. Bear with me. I know it can be a little boring when I read stats, but it's pretty important for the whole picture. So now I'm going back to the 27th of December, which is when I had tweeted that out on the 14th of January that, you know, the leading two scorers there were Barzal and Nelson with 5 points. So over this last bunch of games, Barzal has 10 points, 1 goal, and 9 assists. Nelson, 7 goals, 3 assists. Bailey, 8 points, 3 goals, 5 assists. Lee has 7 points, 5 goals, 2 assists. Beauvillier has 7 points, 3 goals, 4 assists. Broussard only has 4 assists. Eberle, who struggled with coming back from the injury, has kind of turned it on a little bit. He has 7 points, 4 goals, 3 assists. Now you got a bunch of defensemen here who are kind of outscoring most of the forwards, which is kind of funny. But Ryan Pulock has 6 points, 1 goal, 5 assists. Devon Taves has 5 points, 1 goal, 4 assists. Letty has 4 assists. Cizikas has 5 goals. Mayfield, 3 points, 1 goal, 2 assists. Boychuk's got no points during that stretch. Komarov, you know, and he has played less games than some of the rest of the forwards here. He has 6 points in those games, 1 goal, 5 assists. He's really looked very good, especially with Clutterbuck out. I'm surprised he's playing as well as he has, but, I mean, that's a veteran guy right there. He's going to do whatever Barry tells him to do. Dal Cole, again, played less games, has 3 assists. Martin, he was out a little bit with injury. He's got 3 points, 1 goal, and 2 assists. Kunackle, and now he has a bunch of less games played. He was injured there for a while. He's come on pretty strong as of late as well. 6 points, 3 goals, 3 assists. Dobson, 3 points. He's only played about 8 games or so over this stretch here. He's scored his first goal in the NHL, and he's got 3 points with that 1 goal and 2 assists. And Johnston, he's only played a bunch of games as well, but 2 points, 1 goal, 1 assist. So that's 38 goals. 38. You know, that's if my math is right. It's hard to, you know, kind of try to weed through all the different game notes and all the stats on the NHL website, but by my count, 38 goals. That's just unacceptable. You can't continue to win these one-goal games, and we're going to talk about exactly how they can remedy that here moving forward. Power play has been pretty stagnant. The last few games before the break here, they did score a couple of power play goals, which is good to see, but they keep deferring the puck back to the point. Very little action down low and in front. The ones that they have been successful, they've moved the puck through the slot area and down low or even behind the net. But they always seem to just defer back to the point, and they let these point shots go that they're shooting right into blocked lanes. The shots are blocked, causing turnovers. And how many times do you hear Brendan and Butchie say that the puck goes high and or wide? I mean, if you're a betting man, you could probably venture to say that 99% of the shots they take, if they take any at all, are going to be blocked. And that's just either trying too hard or, you know, being a little too slow on their decision-making. But I want to see that improve here when they come back from the break. We are a month from the trade deadline, basically. And we've been saying here this whole entire season so far that, you know, it's time to maybe address some of the needs of this team. You had Barry say at the end of last year he needed a little more pop up front if there was going to be anything. And what did Lou give him? He gave him Eberle to a new contract. Nelson came back on a new contract. Lee came back on a new contract. And they swapped out Filppula for Broussard, who, you know, isn't what they wanted him to be, but not a terrible replacement. I guess you can kind of argue, maybe not. Arthur Staple had a really good article here last week with some potential trade targets, especially with Pellick being out with the torn Achilles for the rest of the regular season. You could see him try to bolster the back end with a vet or somebody with term. Who knows? You know, we have Thomas Hickey down in Bridgeport. He's still injured, I believe, so he would be one of the first call-ups. I mean, we did see Aho get called up and do the Bridgeport shuffle without making any appearances in the NHL aside from his practice time with the team. So we definitely need a first-line wing. We need a third-line center. And some of the names that Arthur brought up were Ilya Kovalchuk, Melker Karlsson, Trevor Lewis, Chris Kreider, which is probably never going to happen. You're not going to see the Rangers and the Islanders hook up on a trade. Connor Sheary from Buffalo, Tyler Ennis from the Sens. And then you got some other guys that are RFAs, like Andreas Athanasiou from the Wings, Kevin LeBlanc from the Sharks, Andy Green, I saw his name mentioned, J.G. Pageau, which that's a risk. He's playing first-line minutes up there in Ottawa on our struggling team. Would he come in to this organization with this coaching staff and find the same success with more limited minutes on the third line? You never know. He's also in a contract year, so it's curious to see what's going to happen there. I'm not saying he wouldn't help. He would definitely help. And you got Tyler Toffoli from the Kings, Craig Smith from the Preds, Brendan Dillon, his name was brought up there for another defenseman. And then we go to the next page here. You got players with term like Kyle Palmieri from New Jersey, Andre Case from the Ducks, Brandon Saad from Chicago, Alec Martinez from the Kings. I think that would be a really good fit. Nick Bonino from the Preds, and Travis Zajac, who Elliot Friedman in his 31 Thoughts last week, supposedly the Islanders could be one of the teams that inquired about him, and he declined to be traded at this time. He wants to stick it out in New Jersey. I know he's close to 1,000 games played in that organization, and to be honest with you, I don't really think he'd be a good fit on the island, especially with his cap hit. He's got one more year left. So if anybody is going to be brought into the team, it would be a guy like Andreas Athanasiou. He's a speedy player. He's doing decent on a really bad Wings team, as we saw a couple weeks ago or last week. I don't remember when exactly, when the Islanders trounced them and put up a snowman. So, remains to be seen. The reality of the situation is Lou Lamoriello has not made a trade in over 600 days. I know if you follow me and also Jeff Capellini on Twitter, you'll see he constantly puts out the amount of days that have transpired since the last time Lou's made a hockey trade. You know, and it's easy to say from this side, you know, what needs to be done. But you don't really know from the GM side if he's tried to do things, if he's struggling to do things, you know, or teams are just trying to get way too much out of the Islanders in order to help them improve. So, I mean, we don't really know. That's part of the lore of the whole Lamoriello way of hockey, is you don't really know anything until it's going to happen. And you see some of the people who cover the sport, and Andrew Gross and Arthur Staple, and you know, Stape has said on his podcast that it's a little frustrating at times because they don't really get much to write about sometimes, you know, outside of the interviews with the players. So it's kind of like a crazy thing there. You know, you genuinely feel, though, that the lack of tinkering is hindering this team. You even have a reluctance when they do bring up somebody who could potentially help from Bridgeport. That player doesn't necessarily draw in unless it's absolutely necessary. And if they do, like Otto, he sees sheltered minutes and doesn't really get to play the type of game that he can play down in Bridgeport. You know, and it's one of those things I don't really understand. It's frustrating as a fan. I know that. I can tell you that. I'm sure you all feel the same way. So we'll see what happens here in the next month. You know, hopefully they at least get some sort of help, be it a veteran defenseman and somebody who could draw in on Barzell's wing and make that line a little more dangerous, get a little more goals there, as Pop, as Barry says. Back now to the power play. Isles' power play percentage is 17.7%, good for 14th in the league. They have only had 113 opportunities, which we've spoken about at length on Twitter if you follow along. That is dead last in the entire league. It is 14 opportunities less than the next closest team and 68 less than the team at the top of the list, which is the Vancouver Canucks. 68 less power play opportunities. Now, I don't know if it's the style that the Islanders play. It's a very defensive you know, minded game, which is why we see a lot of close, you know, nail biters, you could venture to say. But that's a little ridiculous. You've got a guy like Barzal, and I know you can argue that sometimes he kind of maybe complains to the referees a little too much. Trotz has said to the media that, you know, that'll come with age. We have had players in the past like Crosby and Ovechkin kind of complain to the refs a little bit when earlier in their careers, and it's been a thing that they had to get over as well. So I guess it comes with the territory. When a player is frustrated and you mouth off to the refs, you're not going to really get the respect that you would if you just bit your lip and, you know, did your thing. I know even as me, as a non-professional athlete, it could be a little frustrating when there'll be a call that's not made, or, you know, you get a busted lip because they missed a high stick, and, you know, you're like, hey, look, this is what happened. But you're better off sometimes just ignoring that and just going out there and continuing to play hard, right? Now, the penalty kill, a little better, 83.9%, which is good for 14th in the league. They've been penalized 137 times, making them the third most disciplined team in the league. I know that's a little confusing when I say it like that. So they've taken, well, they're at the top, I should say, close to the top, in the top five for the least amount of penalties. They have 6 shorthanded goals for the season, putting them in the 8th spot for that category. The Hurricanes own the top spot with 9. So they're right up there with some of the best teams in the league. Goaltending, obviously been okay. But you can directly correlate that to the run support, so to speak, and the defensive play, which they've struggled with as well. Varlamov has had more playing time. He's got a 3-5 record, I believe, minus the splits, the last 8 games allowing 27 goals. His season goals against average is .259 and a save percentage of .915. That's right around his career numbers, or the expected career numbers for him. So, you know, again, I've seen some folks on message boards, on Reddit, on Twitter, you know, really compare him and Leonard. And Leonard is playing on a less defensively sound team, I guess you can say. Chicago has had their struggles this season for sure, but still relatively close. If you look up the numbers exactly, and I don't have them in front of me, again, I probably should have. I saw somebody tweet it the other day, or maybe it was on HF boards, I can't remember. But they were very similar to where Leonard was last year around this time. You know, he had a good November, then he really struggled, kind of turned it on later in the year. So hopefully the Islanders can do the same thing behind Varlamov the second half of this season down the stretch. You know, you could say maybe the whole entire team peaked a little bit too early. But again, like I said, they banked those points, which is important, because if they were really struggling like they have been right now without those banked points, they might not be in the position that they're in, which is third in the Metro. Grice been a little better. Obviously, they rode Varlamov a little more over the stretch. But Grice is 3-2 in his last couple of starts, allowing 11 goals, bringing his season goals against to .243 and a save percentage of .925, which, as you can expect out of Grice, as much as he struggled there for a little while, still very, 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 very good numbers out of him. Defensively, like we keep saying, they've been less than perfect, and it shows two things. How valuable Pelech has been to this team, and how much they miss him being out with a season-ending injury, which I have to add was from warm-ups with their stupid two-touch thing. Now, I know teams do this throughout the league. They do it in other sports. They play kind of games to warm up there, both mentally and, you know, in other ways before the game. But to be injured like that, and I believe Vasilevsky might have been hurt last season, the same thing with Tampa. I'm not entirely sure. I think I read that. You know, how can you do that? I get it. It's like a team building thing and whatnot, but to lose a player like that for the season based on a warm up that's not hockey related, it can't happen. I mean, it's unfortunate, but I feel like it just can't happen or shouldn't happen. So Barry Trotz's system just relies so heavily on these defensive games, these one goal games. We've said a couple of times that we feel like they are built for playoff hockey, and maybe they are. Maybe just the grind of like the full 82-game season is a lot. It's a lot on any team. Look at Tampa. Tampa destroyed everybody, won the President's Trophy, got swept in the first round by Columbus. Did anybody expect that? Heck no, I didn't. I look at Tampa, and they are such a dynamic team, and they are so balanced in their scoring and their defense. They struggled with injuries a little bit this season too. They're turning it up. I believe they just won 10 in a row, and they're going to roll into the playoffs, the team everybody expected them to be. So the Islanders, they had a great beginning. They can have a mediocre middle. If they finish strong in a playoff position, depending on who they match up against, I could see them finding success in the first round again. You know, and that all hinges upon what Lou Lamoriello does or doesn't do here as we approach the trade deadline. Closing things out. Obviously, we just had the All-Star game and festivities. Matthew Barzal benched right before the All-Star game in the third period of the Rangers game for a turnover. He said he understood why when he was interviewed during the All-Star media day. Trotz, on the other hand, when pressed for information by the local media here, didn't really want to talk about it, said it was between him and Barzal, you know, and then ultimately came out and said it was because of some individual plays by certain players. And we know who they are. You know, you had the Brassard penalty, which he wasn't happy about. I believe Mayfield had that spearing penalty against the Rangers as well, which another questionable call. I get why it was 4 minutes. Any spear is going to be 4 minutes. But why wouldn't you take Lemieux for two for embellishing? I mean, he waved the stick at him and the guy fell down like he was shot. So I don't get it. Yeah. Barzal won the fastest skater, beat Connor McDavid, who's won the last couple of seasons. Amazing. It was good to see them all embracing and, you know, some of the drama that transpired with Kreider and Duclair kind of jumping up and down on him and being excited. I know a couple people had said, hey, some potential former teammates here in the future. So it's always fun to see stuff like that. I didn't get to see much of the All-Star game. I saw the first half of the Metro game yesterday. So I saw Barzal's two assists. Then I had a hockey game myself last night, so I missed out on the rest. Obviously, it didn't really seem like I missed a whole heck of a lot because the Atlantic kind of just steamrolled them in the second period or the second half. Now, the Isles, as we've spoken about now, are off for the next 5 days for their CBA-mandated break. They will not play again until February 1st against the Canucks at home and have a pretty busy month the rest of February with 14 games in 28 days. So that's going to be a tough one here getting back as they approach the deadline. It will give players like Clutterbuck a chance to heal a little bit more, Pellick a chance to heal a little bit more, even though I don't expect to see him, you know, up until maybe, if anything, the last couple weeks of the season, if not, you know, in the playoffs, like as speculated. It's a good time to reset. Like I said, good time for the players to relax, kick back on the beach. You Instagram people out there always seem to find all these amazing pictures of Cizikas by the pool and like Hawaiian shorts there with a couple of drinks in his hand for his wife and their friends and stuff. So, I mean, they're out there, they're having a good time, relaxing, recharging the batteries, soaking up some sun, and hopefully we'll see them as an energized team here moving into the second half of the 2020 season. All right, so now that we pretty much got through all the notes that I have, I opened it up to some questions on Twitter and to some of the other people that I talk about Islanders hockey to. And one of my local buddies over here, Tim, thanks for responding, had one question, and it was regarding something I had mentioned earlier in the episode about what Elliot Friedman had said about Travis Zajac. And he said, Elliot Friedman said there was a deal for Zajac on the table that would require him to waive his no trade. Elliot was pretty sure it was the Isles. How do you feel Zajac fits into the Trotz system? He thinks he would be a close fit or close to a perfect fit for the middle six. Now, as I had said previously, I think he's a little too old for what the Isles want to do. He's a great player in his own right. I know he is close to 1,000 career games all with the Devils, and I'm pretty sure he wants to remain a Devil, which is why he, you know, allegedly said that he wasn't willing to waive to go anywhere, even for his former GM in Lou Lamoriello and the Islanders. So would he fit? You know, there's always a potential to fit. I know he's more of a defensive player and would definitely help to round out that middle six for sure. You know, if the Devils were to maybe eat a little bit of his cap space there, you know, and depending on what they would have to give up, I would be more comfortable going with more of a younger player or somebody who is more of a true rental in this situation. He also asks if Sorokin stays in the KHL, if there is a plan B. Everything that I've seen personally, you know, even last week, you know, I had tweeted out an article from one of the people who covers the KHL. It seems as if, you know, Sorokin is poised to come to the Islanders next season. You know, he's got his really good buddy on his crosstown rival team here doing well with the Rangers. So I think it would be another little extra incentive for Sorokin to come over and play in the best league in the world over here with his New York Islanders. So that's another great question and something we'll be watching and I'm sure talking about here as we move forward. Moving on to some Twitter questions. We have some good ones. Sean Connors, who is the guy who creates all these amazing hand-drawn pictures you see. He's got the MSG commercial. I had him on last season. I know him and I are trying to make some time here to sit down and talk some hockey, so we'll definitely have him on over the next couple of weeks. But he brings up, and he wants to know, what's my take on the Brett Sigalas article about Barzal possibly being traded to the expansion Seattle franchise? I had Brett on last season. I know a lot of you in Twitterverse do not like when he writes about the Islanders because he's predominantly a New York Ranger beat writer, or at least columnist. And I think that's just a bunch of malarkey. You've got a guy in Barzal for the Islanders that is, for all intents and purposes, the face of the franchise, the star. That's why the league, you know, gets him into the All-Star game for the second season in a row here this weekend that we're currently in. I don't see him going anywhere. He's a restricted free agent. Both sides are reportedly not worried about a contract extension just yet. It will be handled in due time. I don't know if it'll be a short-term bridge deal or not. I could see them maybe doing that, or at least Barzal's side conceding to that if it gives the Islanders roster flexibility to add around him and build around him. Do I see them trading his rights or allowing them to take him in the expansion draft? No, absolutely not. You see lesser players, you know, exposed like that or moved like that, you know, maybe a defenseman or somebody that they have down in Bridgeport or even on the NHL roster. But Matthew Barzal is not going anywhere. Absolutely not. He will be locked up at minimum for 8 years here, or maybe even six to give him a couple more years of restricted free agency. Who knows? You saw Mitch Marner and a couple of the other guys up there in Toronto sign for $11 million a season. So that's the bar. That's what's going to happen here with Barzal. If he wants to play on the island, you know, and the Islanders own his rights one way or the other, he's going to be restricted, like I just said. So I don't believe this. We've not seen it. There's speculation there because he played for the Winterhawks, I believe, right? So he's from Vancouver. If anything, wouldn't it make more sense for him to play for the Canucks over Seattle just because he played there in junior? Okay, it's close-ish to Vancouver, but you know, if he's going to play for anybody, it would be Vancouver. And you don't see that. It's just kind of stupid that we're going to talk about something like this because of what happened with Tavares. I don't buy it for a second. So that's that. Thomas Boyle writes, if Lou decides to make a trade, who's a good player with term that could be a good fit? Now, I touched upon this briefly before. I really think if they're going to, you know, trade for anybody, it would potentially be Andreas Athanasiou from the Wings. Seems to be the type of player that would fit well right along Barzal. He's a speedy player. He is definitely offensively gifted. Granted, he's kind of struggling on that struggling Wings team. But I believe he is a restricted free agent with 1 year left, if I'm not mistaken. We could look that up here in a minute. So yeah, someone like him. Some of the players that Staplehead said, you know, maybe a Toffoli, even though he's a little older. You got some of the Sharks players that I had spoken about earlier in the episode as well. like Dylan, maybe perhaps. So someone like that. You know, generally players with term, though, it's going to be a hockey trade where you didn't see it coming. You know, like the Eberle for Strome deal a couple of seasons ago. Something that is kind of out of left field. You know, those are usually the deals nobody's really expecting. And last season, you know, Beauvillier was rumored to be offered in a couple of trades that didn't work out there. So, I mean, you might see something like that. You might lose a player you like from the current roster. But sometimes in the grand scheme of things, the larger picture is you got to give to get. We all know that. And the potential to have something like that happen is real for sure. Who else we got? We got Ryan Maroney, who also always sends in some good questions. What's the actual possibility that Lou gets something done that floors all of us? There's not a lot out there, and I'm not sure we have anything other teams want, you know, except for the guys we want to keep. And that's 100% true, and I just touched upon that briefly. You've got guys in the organization like Devon Taves, Ryan Pulock, you know, to a lesser extent, Aho, Bodie Wild. Then you got some of the other offensive guys down in Bridgeport as well, Otto Koivula, Wallstrom, Bellows. So if you're going to get value back, you know, the potential, like I just said, for the previous guy who wrote in, Thomas Boyle, you never know what's going to happen until it does. Like, that's one of the crazy things about this, especially one of the weird quirks about the way Lou Lamoriello GMs teams, right? It's either going to be big or it's going to be a little ancillary deal that will kind of help them along, a la Garth Snow, that we've so lovingly had to deal with over the last decade. Like I just mentioned, I think that the trade that would probably floor us the most would be, like I just said, for Athanasio from the Wings. I think it makes the most sense. Some of the people I've spoken to here over the last couple of weeks also agree, and that's fans outside of the New York Islanders. You know, some of my Ranger fan buddies and some of my Philly guys and New Jersey guys all kind of seem to agree that that makes the most sense for the New York Islanders. All signs are pointing to some sort of trade here occurring. Andrew Gross and Arthur Staple both lean towards something happening than not, you know, especially with how we're over 600 days without a trade. So I guess we'll have to revisit this again if something comes to fruition. You know, now it's funny. I have a lot of family, you guys know. A lot of them are Islander fans, and I kind of reached out to some of my cousins here who we're in a group chat with just for some questions as well. And my cousin Sean Sherline, go figure. Will Dobson see an expanded role in the second half? What, if any, moves will the Isles make prior to the deadline? So, Sean, you're going to have to rewind the episode a little bit here. And at this point, you probably already heard them. So, but Dobson, I think you can see kind of what we've seen out of him. He'll rotate in and out. Well, I mean, he's not even really rotating in and out right now with Pelech out. So he's seeing a role. I don't know what his minutes are here game by game, but it seems like he's getting thrown out there in different situations. I believe he was out there on some penalty kill, you know, the other night, and you know, he's chipping in offensively when he can. He's been skating the puck so much better and getting out of trouble, and you know, you're seeing the type of creativity he has on the back end with the way he skates the puck into the zone. The zone entries have been really good. So as long as he continues to play Trotz's system and do all the things that are asked of him, I can see them for sure, you know, definitely letting him kind of go with everything here. If he struggles a little bit, you know, he might find himself in the press box. You might see Aho or somebody else called up, you know, eventually, maybe Hickey if he ever gets healthy here. You know, it's been a shame what has happened to him this year. So Dobson has been good, like I keep saying, though. And, you know, it's just a work in progress with a young defenseman. They take a little longer to marinate than some of the other guys do. So that's going to about wrap it up for episode 42 of the Isles Faithful podcast. Thanks for listening and dealing with the crazy break here that I did wind up taking. As always, you can listen to us on many streaming apps and sites like Apple, Google, Spotify, TuneIn, Android, Stitcher, Pandora, Deezer, and finally iHeartRadio, believe it or not. We are finally approved over there. So head over to iHeartRadio and search for the Isles Faithful to listen there if you like to as well. As always, also on the website, theislesfaithful.com, for a little handy-dandy way to see some of the major places you can listen and subscribe, head on over to theislesfaithful.com/subscribe to podcast for everything there. You could also look, I think I have the tweet pinned on the Isles Faithful page. If not, you can find it on the website, 123. Also, big shout out to my continued sponsor here in Kings Coast Coffee. Head on over to Kings Coast. Wayne has a bunch of awesome coffee blends that you really do need to check out. You should also head on over to the roastery over there in Shirley. Tell them I said for you to stop by. Use the code IslesFaithful for 10% off your order. Seriously, if you like caffeine, if you need a little pick-me-up on a tough day, especially today with some of the news that's just coming through with potentially Kobe Bryant dying in a helicopter crash, man, thoughts and prayers for all that. Definitely go to kingscoast.com and check out some of the things you can do over there. It would help him out. It would help me out. Just good small company with awesome product. You just got to support them. And, you know, that's going to pretty much wrap it up for episode 42. So thanks for listening. And even though the Isles are on break, we'll continue to pump out some content here. And you will have something to listen to here this week, at least another one or two times. So let's get at it. We will see you next episode. Let's go, Islanders. We can't really be too excited because there's no hockey. Let's go on. Talk to you soon.